in the morning when I was getting ready for the office, I was just about to leave my home, and then suddenly we experienced this electricity cut down. And I just called these, electricity company guys, their helpline, and they said that, you know, there is an issue in your area of some big power cables are burnt out, and we are going to fix them. I said, how much time? They said that, 2 to 3 hours. I said, okay, then I leave them, and I went to office. Around 4 o'clock, I got a call from my wife, and she said that mother is not breathing well, and she is suffocating, and I am, rushing her to the hospital. And then I just left my office and I rushed to the hospital where they went. And then when I saw her, she was almost, she can't breathe properly, sweating. And then they put oxygen on her. And then some medications they started. And she lived at the hospital for 2 days to recover. It's a very terrible day for me. Because of this electricity failure, we almost lost our mom.
Shafqat Hussain lives in central Islamabad, Pakistan, with his mum, his dad, his wife and 3 kids. He remembers this summer's day pretty clearly for 2 main reasons. The first one is because his dear 70-year-old mum, Syra, nearly died after they lost power for 28 hours.
In summertime, in June and July, it goes to 42 to 43 degrees. And when you are at home and these all, cemented walls, and then the heat outside and the scorching sun, it's very, difficult to survive in there.
With no respite from the humid, hot air, Syra couldn't cool down in the extreme summer heat and eventually struggled to breathe.
When you don't have any electricity around, forget about the air conditioning. Your fans are not working, and even you don't have refrigerators on, so you don't have any, cold water even to drink.
The second reason this day was memorable is this was the day Shafqat decided enough was enough. Each day, he'd go to work worrying if his family might have to sit at home in the dark, unable to work, to study, to use basic home appliances, even to turn on a fan to survive a summer's day. He had an idea, something his colleague had mentioned and that he'd seen advertised on the telly.
Har din jo suraj talu hota hai, roshni ka ek naya safar shuru hota hai.
It was time to take the leap. All he needed was the cash.
It's difficult to afford sometimes because, it's almost 200,000 rupees.
200,000 Pakistani rupees is about 720 US bucks. Shafqat decided to ask his boss at the marketing company where he heads logistics if he could loan the money. They agreed.
And then now they are just deducting from my salary in every month basis.
Soon after that, Shafqat went ahead with his plan.
Because there is no alternate in this country.
And a matter of months later, his home was powered by the sun that had almost killed his mum months earlier.
Because it's your own and you're getting your energy from the sun. And once it's done, it's installed. So at least you don't have any worries behind that, if I'm not home, the kind of experience I faced could happen again. So now it's a kind of, you can say sense of safety.
Shafqat's story is one of many millions in Pakistan and other energy-poor regions beyond. where a regular electricity supply is truly a luxury. But he's also part of a growing trend of people taking matters into their own hands and tapping into a different power source. Across Pakistan, a quiet but rapid solar revolution is currently playing out.
This is probably the most extreme that has happened in any country in the world with the speed that has happened through this year.
Over the course of 2024, Pakistan will install an estimated 15 to 20 gigawatts of solar power. That could be almost half of its entire generating capacity. And if that figure doesn't quite resonate with you, putting it plainly, it's absolutely heaps.
It's really crazy. It is so remarkable.
Solar panels have suddenly become so cheap, more people than ever around the world can afford them.
It is transformative and it's affordable.
For people whose energy is erratic, expensive, and hard to come by, this is especially transformative. And it'll transform the climate too. You're listening to Living Planet. I'm Charlie Shield. A little while back, energy analysts noticed something weird in the data they were combing through. Pakistan's national electricity grid data, that is. There seemed to be a huge drop in demand for electricity, a drop of 10% since 2022. For a rapidly growing country of 250 million people, where the economy has also grown by 2% in the past 2 years, that just didn't seem right.
You just wouldn't expect that of an emerging country.
Dave Jones is one of these energy analysts who was pretty puzzled by this trend.
I work at a research organisation called Ember, and I track the global electricity transition, and I'm based near London in the UK.
Dave and his team realised that just looking at Pakistan's national grid data wasn't going to give them all the answers, because the electricity was coming from somewhere else. It was coming from rooftops. Rooftops like Shafqat's. And that kind of solar electricity generation wasn't being captured in national statistics. It wasn't really being recorded anywhere.
We heard stories about a lot of solar being deployed, so that's when we thought, okay, right, there's probably a hole in the solar data here, and that gave us the idea then to explore that further.
So, first things first, when you've got a hunch it could be solar, but there aren't many hard data sets around, head to Google Earth to see for yourself.
Oh my God, I had a lot of fun going through Google Earth. It was really hypnotising, just floating around and be able to see all of these solar panels from the satellite images that they have. And it's not on one or two houses in certain areas, wherever, like whichever urban area you went to, whether it was a house or a block of flats or whether it was a factory or a government building, could see those solar panels on the image everywhere.
I had a look too, and Dave's right. Float over Islamabad, Lucknow, Lahore, and you'll see the unmistakable little checkered grids atop homes, businesses, buildings big and small, left, right and centre.
It was unbelievable, just the amount of solar panels on so many buildings spread throughout the whole of the country.
But how to find out just how much solar had made its way to Pakistan?
Tracking how solar is developing and being deployed in different parts of the world is extraordinarily hard. So a lot of the government stats are really delayed or even non-existent.
The renewable energy shift is happening so rapidly, and sometimes randomly, most governments can't track how much power is coming from where quickly enough to crunch official statistics. There is one country with a very useful up-to-date data set, though, and that is China, the world's number one manufacturer of solar PV modules.
We also track the Chinese Export Agency data, which tags the solar panel exports for every country in the world up to the latest month. So really up-to-date data for well over 100 countries across the world. And specifically in the case of Pakistan, it revealed that Pakistan was the sixth biggest installer of solar panels across the world, which is quite a surprise.
The sixth biggest installer of solar panels in the world in 2024. That's behind much bigger, much richer economies like China, the US, Germany, India and Brazil. And obviously ahead of nearly 190 other countries. That is huge news for Pakistan. And the reason that that can even happen, of course, is because of the incredible drop in the price of solar technology.
It's come to that point now that for daytime electricity, it is a no-brainer for people in Pakistan to go out there and to be doing this on the scale that they're doing it.
The price of solar PV modules has plummeted by 90% in the last 15 years alone. In 1975, solar panels cost a bit more than $100 per watt. By 2011, that dropped to $2 per watt. And in 2018, they dipped below 50 cents per watt. Over four decades, solar power has gone from being one of the most expensive, out-of-reach electricity sources to just about the cheapest in most places around the world.
It's really crazy. It is so remarkable. And they're progressively getting cheaper.
Azeem Azhar is a tech entrepreneur and an author. He's based in the UK, where he grew up. But he's got a lot of family in Pakistan, who he chats to about what kind of energy they're using, of course.
I'm the founder of Exponential View, which is a newsletter that looks at the rapidly changing technologies, including renewables. And I'm an investor in AI and deep tech and climate tech companies as well.
Nowadays, solar panels are so cheap in some economies, you may as well get some, even if you don't really need to generate the extra electricity, Azeem says.
It was earlier in 2024 that in some countries like the US and in Germany, it became cheaper to buy a solar panel than to buy a fence panel for your garden made out of wood or fake plastic that looks like wood. And so you started to see the first time in places like Germany, people installing solar panels vertically as fencing, specifically around balconies. Now, of course, the physics of that is that a vertical solar panel doesn't get as much sunlight as one that is sort of horizontal or tilted at an angle points at the sun, but it gets some sunlight and it's cheaper than you're putting a fence panel up. So why not do it and just generate some electricity while you're at it?
And it's not just Pakistan and Germany cashing in. Over the course of this year, Dave's energy data analysis team has tracked high numbers of Chinese solar exports to Saudi Arabia, the Philippines, the UAE, Thailand, South Africa, and Oman too. There are also whispers of people-powered solar trends happening in Zimbabwe, Namibia, and Madagascar. This rise in renewable energy has big, big implications for ambitious global climate goals, especially the one to triple renewable energy capacity by 2030, which until now, based on combined national targets, wasn't looking like it was going to happen. But if on the ground solar surges like the one we're seeing in Pakistan continue, a tripling could actually be within reach. Dave says that this distributed, people-led solar swell brings good news and not so good news for Pakistan as a whole. First, the good news.
Electricity is quite expensive for the consumer. So to be able to buy these cheap solar panels, put it on the roof so you don't need to buy the electricity when it's sunny, is resulting in a lot of savings for people.
Over the past 3 years, Pakistan's electricity prices have soared. Rising oil prices post Putin's invasion of Ukraine, surging tariffs, overinvestment in thermal power plants, and weakening currency have all contributed. For most people, it's incredibly expensive, alongside being incredibly unreliable. With solar, Shafkat says his family's monthly energy bill is about 80% cheaper. And they're no longer afraid their power supply will disappear in the middle of the day.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes in summer times, we experience the load shedding. In 24 hours, you can say that most of the time, 8 hours, no electricity, no power.
Load shedding is when the provider cuts off the electricity in certain areas to balance demand with available supply. This happens a lot in Pakistan, where they often just can't generate enough electricity from the main grid to keep everyone connected 24/7. But it's just one of many reasons that all of a sudden your power might go out and not come back on for hours upon hours.
Everybody in Pakistan is suffering with this issue of electricity failures. The system and the infrastructure is so poor and old that most of the time if there is electricity, you have a power failure because your transformer is burnt out because of overloading. Your cables are burnt, so, you know, after that 8 hours, you are experiencing 3-4 more hours of electricity cut.
As we heard firsthand from Shafkat, that can be especially dangerous for people during summer months, where median temperatures hover around 38 degrees Celsius, or 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Temperatures that are only increasing as global warming hits hot countries like Pakistan particularly hard, fueling a rise in extreme weather across the country.
For neighbouring Pakistan, it was the hottest April in 61 years.
Now, a record heat wave is sweeping across parts of southern and eastern Asia.
Hundreds of millions of people across South and Southeast Asia are facing...
Now, extreme heat is one of many factors that makes Asia...
1 year after the catastrophic floods in Pakistan, life in the disaster-hit regions have not resumed to normal levels.
That brings us to another bit of good news from Pakistan's solar boom. It's helping reduce the country's carbon emissions that contribute to global warming.
It's a good thing in the extent that in the immediate term now there's less coal and gas generation. So the solar is doing what you would expect it to do, which is meeting that electricity demand and resulting in less fossil generation.
So if the solar revolution means fewer fossil fuels burnt, lower emissions, cheaper and more reliable electricity, what could the downsides be? It's mainly got to do with the difficulties of integrating this new power with the current system.
Solar panels are so cheap. It's such an obvious thing to do, but you need to make sure that it happens in a sustainable way for the whole of the system.
One of the main hurdles is that electricity grids are incredibly complex to organise, operate and facilitate. And this solar surge risks disrupting the system Pakistan currently has in place, which could have unintended consequences.
The bad thing is that the way those power plants were planned and funded was to run a minimum amount of hours. That now means that that electricity in the rest of the hours is coming significantly more expensive and causing problems for balancing the grid more generally.
Because this solar surge has happened so suddenly, the grid system operators haven't had time to prepare, to figure out what they need to do to integrate this new source of power, what it means for their contracts with fossil fuel suppliers, for the prices they're charging, for the kind of energy demand they can expect.
They haven't had time, they didn't expect this to happen at this magnitude. This is probably the most extreme that has happened in any country in the world with the speed that has happened through this year.
And if the government perceives the solar boom to be simply too destructive to its current system, Dave thinks it could try to stop it altogether.
And what really risks happening in Pakistan now is that you have a real blanket ban on any more solar coming in, and you just turn off the taps and it stops. And we've seen that in so many countries over and over again over the last decade.
Like Vietnam, for example.
There was a major surge in Vietnam through 2019. And that caused a similar problem as what we're seeing in Pakistan now. And there was just an import ban.
Something that will really help with the integration of solar energy is battery storage.
The next step will be batteries, and batteries are really, really coming down in price. What I would say about my relatives in Pakistan, they do, of course, have solar panels, but they also still have diesel generators because we haven't yet got the price of batteries down far enough to rely on battery backup. But, you know, that will happen in the next few years.
The biggest, most exciting part of this solar revolution, according to Azeem, that soon almost anyone, anywhere, could take part.
Until now, if you wanted to get into the energy business, you had to find billions of dollars of capital and do deals with regulatory authorities and deals with financiers and spend several years building a big nuclear power station or a combined cycle gas plant. Very, very few organizations or entities could do that. And then you'd have to find a grid connection for something that's producing, you know, 800 megawatts or whatever it happens to be. You know, it's a huge ask.
Once upon a time, the countries that sat on fossil fuel reserves ruled the energy roost. But wind, water, and sunshine are in ample supply all across the world. And now that the tech to harness those sources has improved so much, and regular consumers far and wide can tap into them, we could see some of those old power dynamics start to shift.
I think we have a really good precedent for this. And I think the precedent to go back to is what happened in the computer industry. So in the 1970s, in order to buy a computer, you needed a lot of money and you had to be a big company. And you bought a big mainframe that meant you needed to have a big building with cooling and lots of space. And we then got the PC revolution where these modular computers came out. They were much less powerful than the big mainframes, but many, many more people could afford to buy them and businesses could afford to buy them. And what we saw then was an expansion of the use of computing across our economies and a democratization of that particular technology. I think it's fair to say that electricity is a precursor to wealth and prosperity. You don't need very much to benefit in the first instance. The first kilowatt of generation you can get in a home that doesn't have electricity, it powers a fridge, it powers an induction hob, it powers an air conditioner or a fan at night, it charges Android devices, it provides light, it is transformative. And it's affordable. So I think that this is an enormous, enormous deal.
Since installing solar on his rooftop, Shafkat could not be happier. It's certainly no exaggeration to say that it's transformed his family's life. So far, Shafkat sees it as a win-win-win. Plus, now he can relax a bit more on the job and tend to other worries in life.
I have to, you know, receive the messages and calls from my wife and my mom that fix it, fix it, fix it. We have this problem. Now we don't have water. Now we don't have electricity. So we can't go anywhere because we cannot iron our clothes and so on and so forth. Now I'm easy that, you know, I don't receive any calls from them of, you know, complaining of the energy problem. A little ease in my life.
This episode of Living Planet was produced by me, Charlie Shield. It was edited by Neil King. Timon Haidon waved a little magic wand in the studio. If you liked this episode, we would love to know. A rating and review on Apple Podcasts would make us extra happy. Or you can send us an email to livingplanet@dw.com. Let us know what you think and if there are things you want us to cover. We'll be back next week with a new episode.
In 1986, I was flying for the Navy, and the biggest threat to U.S. national security was the evil empire. These days, though, there's another threat out there, climate change. I'm Kai Rizdahl, and on How We Survive, we go to the front lines where climate change meets national security and discover how the U.S. military is shaping our climate future. Listen to How We Survive wherever you get your podcasts.